financial markets in turmoil.
What are the root causes of the financial crisis?
The dollar losing value.
Heading for its biggest loss in nearly three decades.
Will Social Security even be there?
I don't know.
Buy or rent?
That's a very good question.
Interest rates?
I'm not so sure.
Where do you put your money?
I don't know.
Welcome to the show that answers your questions. This is Follow the Money Weekly with your host, economist and best-selling author.
Here's Jerry Robinson.
All right, friends, welcome to you all around the world. Welcome to Follow the Money Radio. So grateful to have you here along for the ride. My name is Jerry Robinson, as you just heard, and welcome to episode number 416 of Follow the Money Radio. This podcast episode entitled Market Insights. We're going to be talking about the market and what has happened over the first half of 2022. Really quite something. In fact, anyone who has been investing for any period of time has very unlikely, it's very unlikely that they have ever seen anything like what we have experienced over the last few years. I've talked to many investors who've been investing longer than me. I mean, I got started investing back in the 90s. But, you know, certainly I have never, ever in my life seen what we have seen over the last couple of years. It's just been simply astonishing. The rise in asset prices followed by the decline in asset prices that we have seen has just been nothing short of just a straight up horror ride, like a roller coaster of some kind, right? Some sort of terrifying ride. And when you look at what's happened here, you realize that in 2020, go back to March of 2020, whenever we saw much of this COVID-19 situation beginning to unfold, not just around the United States, but also the globe. The U.S. response to COVID-19 was to do what? It was to print lots and lots and lots and lots of money, right? Lots of money. They printed lots and lots of money. The United States printed more money in 2020 than had been printed for almost centuries before, right? I mean, it was an incredible amount of money that was pumped into the economy in 2020. Why? Why did they pump so much money into the economy in 2020? Well, they were trying to do what? They were trying to stave off a collapse of the economy. They were trying to head off a straight up depression, right, in the overall economy. And at the very least, they were trying to stave off a recession, right? Well, now we are finally having to deal with the situation. It's almost like when someone gets a cold or maybe the flu, and instead of actually dealing with the underlying issue, you just simply try to mask the situation. Well, you might be able to mask it for a little bit, but eventually you're going to have to deal with it, right? It's not going to be a fun thing. And that's exactly what we have seen here. So in 2020, the monetary policy makers, the fiscal policy makers in Washington, the White House, everybody assembling a plan to stave off any kind of real meaningful economic pain for who? Well, mainly for the investor class. But they also mailed out lots of checks to average individuals as well back in 2020. And so when you look back at 2020, this is really the moment where we are now feeling the pain a couple of years later, right? So our response in 2020, the United States' response to the economy in 2020 is now responsible for much of what we're dealing with today, right? And many people don't understand that. We've been talking about that here with our folks here at followthemoney.com, our members here, our premium members. We do a live coaching call every week, and we keep our members apprised of what's happening, talking about the markets, talking about various markets, and talking about the economy. Well, you know, we just didn't have the recession that we needed to have in 2020. It was basically delayed. It was basically delayed through policy, trying to prop up the market so as to prevent any kind of major meaningful economic pain. Well, as I mentioned, now we are finally in the place where all of that money printing had to eventually come to an end, and then the Fed had to begin dialing back. They had to begin taking money out of the system. You do that by raising interest rates. And so the Fed now has been raising interest rates. This has put a really big push upward on the value or the price of the U.S. dollar. It's also caused the a large number of commodities, which were very much inflated throughout 2020 and especially into 2021, even into the beginning of 2022, those prices now beginning to come down. And their coming down is actually a positive thing in some ways. There's some silver lining here. When you look, for example, at the price of oil, as I do this recording this week, I'm looking at crude oil, West Texas Intermediate, around $96. Brent crude oil is back down below $100. You know, for the first time, you have to go back to April to see this price actually reached in Brent crude. Gasoline prices are also way off of their highs. Natural gas trading probably half of where it was back in June. You even take a look at things like cotton, which cotton prices were almost twice the price that they are now just a month ago. Gold has also come down significantly, down to about $1,733 as we do this recording. Silver falling below $20, down to $19 as of this recording. And so you just go through the list. Corn prices, they fell from around $800 down to about $584 over the last month, right? Soybeans have really fallen sharply from about $1,750 down to about $1,400. So wheat prices were trading at $1,300 back in May, now trading at about $790, right? So we've seen a big move down in many of these commodity prices. Copper also, really important move here. Copper was trading at about $4.80 back in April. You know, now it's trading at about $3.40. So it's come down dramatically. Now, the reason why there's a silver lining there, of course, is that those are input costs. So those are costs that go into the goods that you and I buy as consumers or that businesses buy. And so when the price of corn comes down, when the price of wheat and rice, and when the price of soybean oil and soybeans and the price of cotton and the price of crude oil and gasoline, when all these prices come down, well, what that does is it lowers the overall price of everything, right? Because those are input costs. Those go into goods. And so it's good on one hand to see these prices coming down because it's going to inevitably lead to lower price inflation because the inputs are coming down. Therefore, the output is going to be, you know, cheaper than what it was before. So we do have a nice pullback in many commodities, but at the same time, it's difficult to know whether this is actually going to remain this way. Because when you look at the actual supply and demand situation in the commodities complex, you'll find that the crude oil market, for example, has probably, it's rarely been tighter when it comes to supply and demand. When you look at the supply-demand figures across the board on many of these commodities, you'll find that the supply-demand fundamentals are not really supporting lower prices. In fact, what's happening is the market is projecting that we're going to have a recession, which we probably already are in a recession, and they're projecting that, so they're expecting a slowdown, even though the fundamentals are not necessarily suggesting that that the demand is down. They're expecting lower demand in the future. Now, some commodities have seen a dip in demand, but not all, especially oil, for example. So we haven't seen that total demand destruction just go into full effect and people just stop buying, you know, gas and it's really cutting their cost everywhere. We haven't seen the consumer, even though the consumer is pessimistic, even though consumer sentiment is down, consumers are still spending money and they're still buying these things that were inflated. So you don't really have the fundamentals saying, hey, all of this rally in commodity prices is over. What you actually have is a fear of an economic slowdown globally, not just here in the United States. And that is putting a drag on many of these commodities that came up. So the point is that how long will these commodity prices remain low, right? Is this over? Is the commodity bull market over? Remember, we were talking about the commodity bull market back in 2020. And we were telling you, you know, all this monetary inflation is just going to drive up prices. And sure enough, we had an incredible rise in asset prices, right? I mean, it's something that none of us have really ever seen. I don't think anyone, unless you've been investing for more than 50 years, and I'm sure there's many people in our audience today, you know, who have been investing that long, but you'd have to be investing about that long to have seen anything similar to what we have seen. And I would even say in that case, it wasn't quite similar. It wasn't apples for apples. It was still a different kind of scenario. So you out there listening to this broadcast today, if you are invested in this economy, if you're invested in this market, if you're invested, whether it's commodities, whether it's stocks, whatever it is, you have, and even cryptocurrencies, let's not forget that as well. What an incredible decline we've seen there. You have been investing through one of the most difficult and challenging times in the last 50 plus years. Just full stop. I mean, there has rarely been a time that investors have faced this kind of carnage. After so much in asset price inflation, right? So yes, we're going through the pain in 2022 that we should have gone through in 2020, right? We should have been able to handle this and deal with it then, but it was masked. It was covered up. They tried to prevent any kind of pain. And what they did was they made the pain worse, right? So they drove up asset prices, created all of these disarticulations, and of course, inevitably that plus the war that's going on in Russia and Ukraine, that and other factors as well kind of converged to create supply chain problems and all of this. So now we're living on the backside of this incredible monetary experiment, and we're paying the price. And the price is basically massive volatility, right? Wild volatility and extreme asset price inflation, followed by asset price deflation as the Fed goes to cut rates or raise rates. So remember, they cut rates back in 2020 all the way down to zero again, and then they left them there for a period of time, then they started raising them. So right now we're in that period where the Fed is raising rates. It's in that rate hike cycle. And in essence, where we're going is a place where the Fed can finally get to a place where it says, okay, we've raised rates enough. Now what can we do? Well, the Fed knows what to do when it has high rates. It begins to cut those rates. So we will eventually move back into a rate easing cycle, right? Where the Fed gets the rates up to where it wants them, say 3%, 3.5%, wherever their ultimate target is. I believe it's somewhere between 3 and 4%. And then once they're there, then they have permission slip to do what? To begin cutting. And when you move into the rate cutting cycle again, you're going to have another rally, right? You're going to have another rally that's going to push these prices back up. So we are in a wild environment here. Let's just be honest. 2022 has been a brutal year for investors. And the first half, as I mentioned, was the worst first half for the S&P 500 in more than 50 years. You have to go back to like 1970. The Dow Jones hasn't had this kind of first half since 1962. The NASDAQ composite index has not seen this kind of first half ever. Like, going back through the data, I could not find a first half of the NASDAQ in any given year where it had suffered this kind of decline in the first 6 months. I could be wrong, but I didn't find it whenever I was looking. And here's the other thing, is that we don't have any confirmation that the selling pressure is over. Right now, we have the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, and the NASDAQ all in confirmed long-term downtrends in our system. So we alerted our members a while back to the confirmed long-term downtrend status in the stock market, in the S&P 500, for example, which is a really important market to watch. And you know, if you're an investor or if you're a trader in U.S. stocks. And so when we look at the S&P 500, we see that it had this very tough very first half. And we have no immediate signs that the selling is over, right? In fact, we're probably wise to understand that the S&P 500 index is probably going to get worse before it gets better. Now, the problem is that the market, the stock market itself, especially stocks, not commodities, but stocks, they are a voting machine. And so they tend to look ahead around six months into the future. And so they will often bottom before everybody gets the memo. And then they will start to curl back up and start to rise when people are still very bearish, right? So it's difficult to know when the bottom is in or when the bottom is going to be in, but we're watching and monitoring the market for our members here and teaching them how to do the same so that they can understand what's happening in the overall market. So certainly stocks getting hammered in the first half. If you look at commodities, as I mentioned, those have also begun to buckle over the last several weeks as fears of an economic slowdown have arisen. And again, an economic slowdown would mean less demand for certain commodities, and that's why they're falling. So we haven't seen that incredibly decreased demand or demand destruction across the board, but the fear of it is enough to drive down some of these prices. So, you know, the question becomes, is this the end of the bull market in commodities? I would have to say, based upon the fundamentals, I can't see how we're at the end of the commodity bull market. I would expect that we have more upside and that this is, quite frankly, just a long overdue pullback in many of the commodity prices. But it's also possible that the fear of a slowdown, combined with the aggressive rate hikes by the Federal Reserve and now by Europe, Europe is finally getting in on the action and a few others as well, that it could be that it's possible that we have seen the peak, right? So who knows? And I think this is the most important thing to stress to you as the listener out there, is that anybody who tells you that they know, well, then you want to know, you know, what they're using for a crystal ball, because no one knows what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone what's going to happen next week, next month. So we have to follow the money. We have to track the markets. We have to follow what's happening. And right now, like I'm saying, the fundamentals, especially in oil, for example, don't build the case that the price appreciation is over. There's no reason to think that we've seen the ultimate peak in all of these commodities quite yet. So I would be cautious in believing that. Now, it is possible, you know, typically you'll see energy prices, for example, begin to turn down towards the end of a recession. That's or toward the end of a cycle. That's what we saw, for example, back in 2008. You know, energy gave one last gasp higher before it fell. And when it fell, the whole market just came down with it back in 2008. I remember that very, very well. And so we do kind of monitor that energy price, because energy is the one sector that really can't go up without destroying everything. I mean, you can have technology stocks go up to the moon and, you know, it's not going to crater the market. You can have consumer discretionary stocks, you know, go fly high and it won't necessarily crater the market. But when energy stocks begin to rise, oh boy, you know, when oil prices are rising and gas prices are rising, that's a part of the cycle that begins to put real meaningful pressure upon the supply chain. It puts pressure on the transports industry, the transportation industry. It puts pressure on consumers and every business that, you know, of course, every business uses oil in some way. And so when the energy market really begins to take off, it can put big pressure on the broader economy. And that's what we've seen, right? Everybody's complaining now about oil prices. Well, have we seen the peak? Again, I'm not saying that we have. But if you look, for example, at other markets, like say the cryptocurrency market, Bitcoin is down about 60% year to date. So Bitcoin down 60%, that's brutal, right? It's brutal. And again, have we seen the low in Bitcoin? No way to know. No way to know. There's certain levels that we're watching. There's certain areas of support that certainly will likely hold, but we don't know. And that's why we teach our members here to have two different strategies whenever, at least two different strategies whenever you're participating in the market. You want a long-term strategy, which is your investment strategy, and then you want a short-term strategy, which is your trading strategy, right? So you want to be able to be nimble and take advantage of opportunities with your short-term strategy. So you have a little bit of money that you may be using to trade the markets with. And then you have another larger part of your money that you're using for long-term investing. Now, right now, with prices that where they are, I do invest in stocks for the long term. You know, a portion of my overall investment portfolio is in equities, right? So I don't swear off equities. I don't say I'm not going to invest in equities. I do invest a portion of my investment portfolio into equities or stocks. The goal here is that with your long-term investment dollars, you want to invest in high-quality, dividend-paying, appreciating assets, right? If you're going to be in the stock market for the long term, because over time, those are the stocks that really deliver the meaningful gains over time. Not penny stocks, not high-flying stocks that are sexy at the moment, but high-quality, dividend-paying, yielding, appreciating assets that have pricing power and that have brand loyalty, right? You can think of companies out there that are just very well positioned to do well. And when they come down in price, well, that's a good time if you're a long-term investor in stocks to add to those positions, right? So we, from our long-term perspective, from our long-term strategy, we like lower prices because it allows us to add more of those high quality companies to our investment portfolio at a lower price through our dollar cost averaging strategy, right? You get to buy more with your dollar cost averaging money in a given month when prices are down relative to when they're higher. So the dollar cost average actually works out great because you're always buying more shares when prices are lower and you're buying less shares when prices are higher. So I really like the dollar cost average strategy. As many of you know, I like that strategy. But when it comes to your shorter term strategy, you know, with your trading, well, your trading, you can actually take advantage of the current situation, right? Our members have been taking advantage of the current situation by using inverse ETFs, like the short S&P 500 or the short NASDAQ 100 since December. I mean, we started talking about bearish ideas with our members, putting out emails and all of this back in December saying, hey, here's how you short the market. Here's how you make money when the market goes down. So many of our members have made money in this environment through their trading accounts, although their investment accounts have likely gone down because, of course, the market's going down. But how are they able to turn that to their benefit? Well, they're adding more high quality assets when they're cheaper. So your long-term investment strategy should always be intact, right? And you shouldn't allow your long-term investment strategy to be changed or altered by short-term phenomena. But you can take advantage of short-term phenomena with your short-term strategy or your trading strategy. That's what we teach here at Follow the Money. You know, maybe you're out there saying, I don't have a long-term and a short-term strategy. I don't know what you're talking about. I wish I did. I wish I had that. I wish I was able to make money from the markets going down. I wish I knew how to do that. Well, that's why you would want to learn more about Follow the Money. That's what we do. We teach here over and over and over. Every day I put out a daily email. We put out a daily newsletter that goes out to all of our members across the world. We put out our latest ideas. We put out a new swing trading idea. Every day our members have access to all of our latest trading ideas, all of our favorite stock ideas, cryptocurrency portfolio, commodity ideas. I mean, all of that is here waiting for our members. And so that's what we do here at Follow the Money. We're helping people just like you to take advantage of this. And I think in times of sell-offs like we have here, just from my own experience, I began investing back in the 90s, as I mentioned. I shared recently with our members that I made a pretty big mistake in the wake of the 2000 or in the wake of the dot-com bubble, because I was trading, cutting my teeth on trading in the dot-com bubble. I was trading various stocks and making money and losing money, learning, kind of cutting my teeth in the dot-com bubble. But when the market went down, I was not prepared for to trade in a down market. I didn't fully understand what that meant back then. I was a brand new trader. You know, I was new. And I didn't really know what I was doing, to be totally frank with you. I was learning the ropes. And I didn't have a really great teacher, right? So, and this is these are the things that I always tell our members, find a mentor. You need somebody to help you when you're getting started, especially. But as you go on, you need somebody to be able to turn to. And it's a powerful thing. So anyway, in the wake of the dot-com bubble, I wasn't prepared when the market turned. And so what happened was that instead of taking advantage of that moment, I just kind of froze up. And what happened was that many stocks went down to fire sale prices in the wake of the dot-com bubble. I mean, again, I remember Amazon.com, and I kick myself over and over for this, but I remember Amazon.com trading at $15 a share. Right? I remember this. And I remember people talking about how the internet was dead and how it was all over and nothing was, you know, it was all a big fool's gold. It was all, you know, designed to go away in the end. And I could have just stocked up and started dollar cost averaging on Amazon and other high quality companies that I was aware of at the time. But I was scared. I was scared because I believed the hype, right? I believed the hype. I believed that it was all over. Oh, well, it was never going to. Well, that was not a right way to think about it, right? So instead of I was being greedy whenever everybody was being greedy, and then I was being fearful when everybody was being fearful, right? I did it wrong, right? I kind of did it wrong. And I learned greatly from that. I could have really made a meaningful change in my financial life by not being scared back in the wake of the dot-com bubble and actually stepping in and beginning to you know, take advantage of the lower prices across the board in many high quality companies, Microsoft and many others. But I was just scared. And maybe that's where you are today. Maybe you're looking at everything going, I'm just scared out of my mind. I don't know what's going on. I'm worried, you know? Well, that's exactly the way things get whenever you're in the middle of a big bear market, right? And the key is that we teach here is that you have to be able to push through that. And if you're a long-term investor, you've got to recognize when things are on sale. You've just got to recognize it. And you may not think that things are on sale. It may not seem like a sale to you at the time. But when you put it in terms of a 20-year time horizon, like I'm going to be tapping this portfolio 20 years from now, well, then very likely you're looking at a big sale, right, in the middle of a bear market. So my point here in today's show is basically just to kind of provide you an update on what the market is doing, but also to give you some guidance on how we're viewing it. So in this environment, yes, we are trading and taking advantage of short-term opportunities, which there are plenty of, right? You can use options to do that. We like using options. We like selling puts. We like buying calls. We like buying puts. We like to do some things along those lines, but we also like to swing trade stocks and things of that nature. But in addition to that short-term strategy, there's also a long-term strategy. And it's in times like these, whenever we have lots of fear, lots of concern, low visibility as to where things are actually going, that high-quality assets often go on sale. And if you have a long-term time horizon, you can begin to pick up those assets at a discount, right? At a discount relative to where they may be 10, 20 years from now with your long-term perspective. So don't get caught up, I guess is my advice to you. Don't get caught up in the moment here. Don't make the mistake that I did back in the dot-com bubble where I didn't take advantage of the sell-off. I had ridden the way up, but then when everything started to collapse, I didn't see that I had a grand opportunity to add to my investment strategy because the fear was working in my favor as a long-term investor. I just didn't see it at the time. I do now. And I dollar cost average every single month now into high quality assets. I've been doing that for years, but I didn't do it back whenever I had the opportunity early on. And I wish I did. I wish I could go back and change how I approached investing in the wake of the dot-com bubble. I wish I could go back and erase the fear that I had. I wish I could do that, but I can't. And all I can do now is share with you what I learned. And You don't have to follow the crowd and be completely fearful about everything. You can actually begin a long-term investment strategy, if you don't already have one, and take advantage of the current sell-off and begin a dollar cost average strategy, right? So putting in a little bit of money each and every month, not going all in, not backing up the truck, not taking out a second mortgage and buying stocks. No. Just a little bit every single month, right? And you're just putting more and more in and you're taking advantage of the sell-off. If you're going to dollar cost average, is it better to do it in a bear market or better to do it in a bull market? Well, it's if all things being equal, if you're going to dollar cost average for the long term, the bear market is the very best time to do it because that's whenever the prices are down and people are fearful and you're getting a relative discount versus an uptrend when people are greedy and the prices are going higher and higher and higher. So there you go. That's really what I wanted to share with you. Don't allow fear to guide your long-term decisions here, right? Don't do that. Fear is not a good measure of really anything, and it's certainly not a good guide. So I would encourage you to, if you don't already have a long-term investment strategy, you know you need one. So I would begin to think about that. If you already have a long-term strategy, but you don't have a short-term strategy, that's also something you can consider as a way to buttress your long-term strategy or improve its returns or, you know, whatever the case might be, or to provide some hedging, right? So these are the things we teach here at Follow the Money. And I really hope that this first segment of today's podcast episode has been helpful to you. Remember, don't allow the emotions of the day to deter you from the right decisions that you know you need to take for your family's financial future. And if you need help, if you need a coach, if you need a mentor, reach out to us, right? Followthemoney.com. Become a member here. We're, in fact, right now we have a really big sale going on for the summertime. Come join us. Come be a part of our community. We have our coaching call every single week, every single Tuesday morning. They're archived for you. You can go back and watch. Lots of education, lots of courses here for trading, lots of courses around investing. Tons of stuff for you, waiting for you right here at followthemoney.com.
And Follow the Money returns after this.
Hi friends, it's Jerry Robinson here from Follow the Money Radio. Do you want to learn how to trade options? Are you intimidated by options trading but still have a desire to learn how it all works? If so, you will be pleased to know that our options trading course is now on sale in our online store for only $37, but for a very limited time. When you purchase this 5-hour online video course, you will learn how to leverage the power of options to generate a steady stream of income from the markets while minimizing risk. This course, which is deeply discounted for a limited time, provides you with 8 full-length video lessons with me that will walk you step by step on how to get started in the world of trading options. This video course begins with a comprehensive introduction to key options trading concepts, including calls and puts, premiums, volatility, along with an introduction to option Greeks and how to properly value an option before you make a trade. But this video course not only introduces you to the basic concepts of options trading, it also provides you with 3 proven option trading strategies, including how to rent out the stocks that you already own to others to generate a passive income by selling covered call options. We'll also teach you a smart way to buy call options for profits, and our students have told us that the secrets revealed in this video alone are worth the price of the entire options trading course. You'll also learn a unique options trading strategy where you can get paid while you wait to buy your favorite stock. This is an advanced trading strategy that is one of our favorites among our top trading students. So this options trading course contains a tremendous amount of knowledge jam-packed into 5 full hours of video presentations that you will want to watch over and over again as you begin or continue your trading journey. If your goal is to learn how to make money with options, this is a must-have education video series. And you can unlock this entire video course right now by simply going to followthemoney.com/shop. There, you'll find our online store and simply look for the options trading course. This is a special introductory price and it is a limited time offer, so act now. Go to followthemoney.com/shop and take advantage of our deeply discounted options trading course today. All right, friends, welcome back to Follow the Money Radio. So grateful that you're here along with us. In segment two here, I want to move into the book club, Jerry Robinson's book club. In this segment, we like to read an excerpt from popular books that may be helpful to you. This one is published by Columbia Business School. This is a book entitled The Most Important Thing by Howard Marks, Uncommon Sense for the Thoughtful Investor. This is taken from chapter one of Mr. Mark's book. Few people have what it takes to be great investors. Some can be taught, but not everyone. And those who can be taught can't be taught everything. Valid approaches work some of the time, but not all. And investing can't be reduced to an algorithm and turned over to a computer. Even the best investors don't get it right every time. The reasons are simple. No rule always works. The environment isn't controllable, and circumstances rarely repeat exactly. Psychology plays a major role in markets, and because it's highly variable, cause and effect relationships are not reliable. An investment approach may work for a while, but eventually the actions it calls for will change the environment, meaning a new model is needed. And if others emulate an approach, that will blunt its effectiveness. Investing, like economics, is more art than science, and that means that it can get a little messy. One of the most important things to bear in mind today is that economics isn't an exact science. It may not even be much of a science at all, in the sense that in science, controlled experiments can be conducted, past results can be replicated with confidence, and cause and effect relationships can be depended on to hold. Because investing is at least as much an art as it is a science, it's never my goal in this book or elsewhere to suggest that it can be routinized. In fact, one of the things I most want to emphasize is how essential it is that one's investment approach be intuitive and adaptive rather than be fixed and mechanistic. At bottom, it's a matter of what you're trying to accomplish. Anyone can achieve average investment performance. Just invest in an index fund that buys a little of everything. That will give you what is known as market returns, merely matching whatever the market does. But successful investors want more. They want to beat the market. In my view, that's the definition of successful investing, doing better than the market and other investors. To accomplish that, you need either good luck or superior insight. Counting on luck isn't much of a plan, so you better concentrate on insight. In basketball, they say, you can't coach height, meaning all the coaching in the world won't make a player taller. It's almost as hard to teach insight. As with any other art form, some people just understand investing better than others. They have or manage to acquire that necessary trace of wisdom that Ben Graham so eloquently calls for. Everyone wants to make money. All of economics is based on belief in the universality of the profit motive. So is capitalism. The profit motive makes people work harder and risk their capital. The pursuit of profit has produced much of the material progress the world has enjoyed. But that universality also makes beating the market a difficult task. Millions of people are competing for each available dollar of investment gain. And who will get it? The person who's a step ahead. In some pursuits, getting to the front of the pack means more schooling, more time in the gym or the library, better nutrition, more perspiration, greater stamina, or better equipment. But in investing, where these things count for less, it calls for more perceptive thinking at what I call the second level. Would-be investors can take courses in finance and accounting, read widely, and if they're fortunate, receive mentoring from someone with a deep understanding of the investment process. But only a few of them will achieve the superior insight, intuition, sense of value, and awareness of psychology that are required for consistently above average profits and results. Doing so requires second-level thinking. Remember, your goal in investing isn't to earn average returns. You want to do better than average. Thus, your thinking has to be better than that of others, both more powerful and at a higher level. Since other investors may be smart, well-informed, and highly computerized, you must find an edge that they don't have. You must think of something that they haven't thought of, see things they miss, or bring insight that they don't possess. You have to react differently and behave differently. In short, being right may be a necessary condition for investment success, but it won't be sufficient. You must be more right than others. which by definition means your thinking has to be different. What is second-level thinking? First-level thinking says, it's a good company, let's buy the stock. Second-level thinking says, it's a good company, but everyone thinks it's a great company, and it's not. So the stock is overrated and overpriced, let's sell. First-level thinking says, the outlook calls for low growth and rising inflation, let's dump our stocks. Second-level thinking says, the outlook stinks, but everyone else is selling in panic, let's buy. First-level thinking says, I think the company's earnings will fall, sell. Second-level thinking says, I think the company's earnings will fall less than people expect, and the pleasant surprise will lift the stock, buy. First-level thinking is simplistic and superficial, and just about everyone can do it. All the first-level thinker needs is an opinion about the future, as in, the outlook for the company is favorable, meaning the stock will go up. But second-level thinking is deep, complex, and often convoluted. First-level thinkers look for a simple formula or easy answer. Second-level thinkers know that success in investing is the antithesis of simple. First-level thinkers think the same way other first-level thinkers do about the same things, and they generally reach the same conclusions. By definition, this can't be the route to superior results. All investors can't beat the market, since collectively they are the market. Before trying to compete in the zero-sum world of investing, you must ask yourself whether you have good reason to expect to be in the top half. To outperform the average investor, you have to be able to outthink the consensus. For your performance to diverge from the norm, your expectations, and thus your portfolio, have to diverge from the norm, and you have to be more right than the consensus. Different and better. That's a pretty good description of second-level thinking. Those who consider the investment process simple generally aren't aware of the need for or even the existence of second-level thinking. But the good news is that the prevalence of first-level thinkers increases the returns available to second-level thinkers. And to consistently achieve superior investment returns, you must be one of them. And that's an excerpt from Chapter 1 of Howard Marks' excellent book, The Most Important Thing, on Common Sense for the Thoughtful Investor, available at bookstores everywhere. All right, friends, and that brings us to the end of our broadcast. Thank you so much for being here today. It is always an honor and a pleasure to be joined by you on this podcast each and every time we do it. And as always, I'd like to leave you with a final word, this time by the great 20th century investor Sir John Templeton, who said, "To buy when others are despondently selling and to sell when others are euphorically buying takes the greatest courage, but provides the greatest profit." That's just something to think about. Remember, friends, when you want the truth about the global economy, just follow the money. Have a safe and prosperous week, and we'll see you right back here next time. Until then, God bless.
The information contained on the Follow the Money podcast is strictly for informational and educational purposes. It should not be construed as specific investment advice. The views and opinions of our guests and sponsors, including Tom Cloud, are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of FTMDaily.com or Robinson Media Group, LLC. Jerry Robinson does hold an insurance license and at times may offer consulting on life insurance and fixed retirement income products. Follow-up, individualized responses to email or phone requests that involve the rendering of personalized investment advice for compensation will not be made absent compliance with state investment advisor registration requirements or an applicable exemption or exclusion and applicable insurance regulations. Past performance is not indicative of future results. You should be aware of the real risk of loss in following any strategy or investment decision discussed on the podcast. Remember, never do your financial planning through podcast or radio. It's your money. Be wise, do your due diligence, and always consult a trusted financial professional before making any financial decisions.